On ABC Radio, Leon Compton.
The Tasmanian Integrity Commission at the moment are conducting a review, and it's going on into lobbying, particularly the field, sometimes lucrative field, for people who are paid to lobby the government or the opposition to achieve a political outcome. There's a lot of high-powered lobbying happening in Tasmania, and you may or may not be aware of how it works behind the scenes. You want a tax cut for your gambling operation? You hire a lobbyist. You want your airport runway improved? You hire a lobbyist. You don't like the structure of proposed recycling legislation for Tasmania? You hire a lobbyist to try and get inside the corridors of power and advocate for the outcome that works for you. So how's it regulated here? Should we be concerned? And how can you get involved in having your say? And will lobbyists be lobbying the Integrity Commission? Let's say good morning to Michael Easton, the CEO of the Integrity Commission. Michael, good morning to you. How many people are actually registered in Tasmania? How big is the industry of lobbying government or opposition on clients' behalf, Michael?
Well, there's 65 registered lobbyists at the moment, and that's responding to the definition of lobbyists as it stands in the current code of conduct. And I note in your introduction you talked about people who are paid to be lobbyists, but in fact there's far more lobbyists than that. They're just the ones who are operating in accordance with the current definition, so that the current definition is that people who lobby on behalf of a third-party client. But there's far more lobbying going on than that. It's important that we cover that area, but there's also in-house lobbyists. There's also individual people who lobby governments or elected representatives, and they can have just as much influence as a so-called high-powered lobbyist. So we're interested in the whole lot. So 65 registered under the definition, but I would say far more if we expand that definition.
What's the type of lobbying then that concerns you most, the intersection where you're most likely to have problems around your field, integrity in process?
Well, it's the kind that the public doesn't know about. So our position is that lobbying is a good thing. It's part of the democratic process. It's important that members of parliament, and particularly ministers, decision makers, also senior bureaucrats, have access to industries and so forth, because that influences policy, and that's not a bad thing. But it needs to be transparent and accountable, and that's what we're interested in. So rather than saying there's particular types of lobbying that we're interested in, I think we can figure that out. You name some of them, but there's a wider array of issues than just what you said, obviously. It's more about community confidence in government decision-making. That's what worries us. How do we build that confidence? How does the community have trust in decision-making? It's through understanding and being aware of what's going on. That's the bit that we're interested in.
I think one thing people would like to know is every incident in which a lobbyist has met with a minister or a leader of the opposition or a politician about a particular issue that they're being paid to lobby on. Do we know that at the moment?
No, we don't. As it stands, there's two aspects to this. There's the lobbyist code of conduct, and then there's the register of lobbyists. The code sets the standards of behaviour and so forth. The register itself, as it stands, is a register of who the lobbyists are and who their clients are. It doesn't contain any information about what activities they've been up to. And that's the bit, I guess, which is, at the moment in Tasmania, the great unknown. But to be fair, across other jurisdictions in Australia and also internationally, it's not easy. There's no easy answer to it. Say, for example, in Queensland, they have access to ministerial diaries up there, and they also have what they call a meeting log. So all lobbyists are required to, within 14 days of a meeting where they meet with the minister, to put on that log who they met, why, and what was discussed. And you'd think that would give the answers that we're after, but it doesn't. Because there's a drop-down list with the system that they use for the meeting log, and two of the options are commercial in confidence or other. So you'll find, if you did an analysis of the data up there, a great proportion of the outcomes are telling you that there's a meeting in place. That's a good thing. Who with? That's a good thing. But what it's about, and in particular what issues have been discussed, isn't necessarily being identified. And so from our perspective, we want to build a system that actually allows us to get to that end point. There's no point saying or espousing all these great notions of transparency if then our system doesn't deliver it.
So, I'm interested in that example that you gave me, that it's the lobbyists responsible for updating that register. I would like to think that there is parliamentary accountability over managing the register. At the moment, it's the Department of Premier and Cabinet that are responsible for looking after these issues. Should that change?
Well, it is going to change. Government has determined that the management and administration of the lobbying framework, as it's called, will transfer to us. And in fact, under our legislation, we have responsibility for establishing and maintaining codes of conduct and registration systems for lobbyists. It's always been there. The existing framework was developed before the Integrity Commission came into existence. So one could ask why now, but the reality is that it is going to be transferred to us. So we will have a dual role of administering the lobbying framework, well, establishing it in the first place, administering it, and then also regulating it. That begs questions of itself, but I'm confident that within our agency, we have sufficient barriers in place to allow for administration of the register itself versus regulation on our operations side, and we will do both.
I want to know what resources you've got. You'd be aware that the criticism of the Integrity Commission in Tasmania, amongst others, is that you don't have the resources to do as wide a job as happens in other states. And now you'll be managing this. How? What extra resources will it take?
We're aware of this issue, have been aware of it for some time. In the 2021 budget, the government responded to our request for additional resources and provided at that time a 3-year funding boost to cover a range of issues. But one of those issues was exactly this, our ability to monitor or to administer and then monitor compliance with the lobbying code of conduct and the register. So the government actually has given us those resources. I'm aware of those arguments, but the reality is that in 2021, we were given additional resources, and we're going to use those and have been using those to do this consultation process and then to move into developing a new framework and then monitoring it. So we could always have more resources, sure, but we actually have been given more resources to do this.
If I'm a well-remunerated lobbyist, previously been involved at the highest levels of politics in Tasmania, I've got a wealthy client who wants a significant tax cut for their business, and I negotiate that, I get a tax cut. Should I not be paid a success fee for earning my wealthy shareholders tens of millions of dollars, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars, through the skill of my lobbying?
Well, others would say no. I'm not going to answer that question myself at the moment, because that's one of the issues that we've raised in the consultation process. So I'm interested in what people say. The reality is, in that other jurisdictions, success fees are banned. And if I was to broadly answer your question, I would say that success fees provide incentives for lobbyists to up the ante. And if we're doing that, it's creating a greater space for potential misconduct risks. If we look at, did you say you were a lobbyist? If you thought I've got a fairly substantial success fee at stake here, I might think about broader ways of achieving success. And that invites potential misconduct risks. I'm not saying this happens now. We're working in the space of risk areas, so we have to speculate sometimes, speculate based on evidence. But the reality could be that you decide in order to achieve success, you're going to offer a gift, for example, or an incentive to a decision maker, and that may be a government minister, it could be a local government councillor, it could be a senior bureaucrat. You're interested in upping the stakes in order to achieve your success. But ultimately, what's the broader success that I'm interested in? I'm working for the public interest. It's good policy outcomes. So if we're allowing systems like success fees, then we're accepting that these risks exist.
How would you enforce the banning of success fees? How would you have the power then to understand the commercial in confidence contracts that exist between a wealthy Tasmanian interest or an interstate-owned interest and the person they're employing to lobby? How would you have the power to delve into that contract and even know if there was a success fee at stake?
That's a good question, Leon. It invites, again, I don't want to get into what the potential solutions are with this, but if we're talking at the general level, one of the results that may come out of this process is legislative change. So if we're talking about mechanisms to regulate success fees, but also other issues like revolving door bans and former ministers becoming lobbyists and cooling off periods, that sort of thing, there needs to be some sort of regulatory response. Whether that's in our legislation or whether it becomes an offence, no doubt under these systems people have to sign statutory declarations and maybe there's a statement there saying, I will not receive a success fee, and then you sign off on that. If that turns out to be an untruth, then you've committed an offence. Whether we would prosecute that or regulate that or somebody else, that's a different matter. But compliance is a difficult thing. It's one of the key areas that we're interested in getting feedback on, because some of these things are reliant on people making those statements of honesty that these issues aren't occurring. The first step, of course, is to make it an offence or to prohibit it. And then the second thing is how you can enforce compliance.
Michael Easton's our guest this morning, CEO of Tasmania's Integrity Commission. So, Michael, let's talk about the process from here. I mean, before we get to any sort of legislative change, you're inviting public feedback. How do people have their say?
Well, it's all on our website. It's the modern day and age. We've prepared a detailed research paper. That's about 60-odd pages for those who are interested.
It's long and complex is how I would describe it, having read it last night.
Complex issue. But we've also prepared a summary paper with submission prompts in it. So what we'd encourage people to do is go to our website, or they can call us and we'll send them a copy of that consultation paper. But if they're able to, go to our website, download the summary paper, have a look through that, see if they've got more interest in the detail that's in the research paper. And then we have an electronic setup whereby people can make submissions through the website. They can respond to all the prompts, some of the prompts, or none of the prompts. Just give us their views.
Will they all be public, those submissions? Because I'd be interested to know what the lobbyists want to lobby you about when it comes to this. And I think it would be part of an interesting part of the process to understand exactly what is said to you in this issue.
And that's community debate. And we're trying to stimulate debate.
So will they all be public?
So we're adopting the government's default position, which is that submissions will be made public unless people request otherwise or just request anonymity.
I'm interested who'll get anonymity. Now, will it be the lobbyists, or will you be determined that the lobbyist positions are contained publicly so we can understand the people that profit most from this, what their positions are?
Yeah. And look, we're interested to hear from lobbyists, and not just people who are working for third parties, but people who actually identify themselves as an individual lobbyist. And I could understand a person in that situation actually giving us some pretty good frank advice or opinion on their process and then asking us not to publish their name. That'd be entirely appropriate.
Would we have their submission?
Yes.
But just no name attached?
Yeah, that's right.
So we'd still be able to see the submission itself?
Yeah, that's right.
It's been good to see you. How long is the window for people commenting on lobbying open for?
We'd like submissions by 30 June, if possible. So 6 weeks.
A month and a half.
Yeah.
Appreciate you coming in this morning. Michael Easton, CEO of the Integrity Commission.